Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome everyone to an afternoon edition of the Baseball America Playoff Podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. J.J., our issue production schedule got in the way this morning, so we're coming on this afternoon. We'll still have this up before another two-game day. Postseason
games. Let me think. Okay, so there's two games today. Which game is going to be on during the afternoon? They alternate
hard.
Those back and forth, right? It's just like, okay.
It's so all about fairness for the fans, JJ. That's what it is, I'm sure. But yeah, we have, again, the undercard, the American League Championship Series on in the afternoon. And that one's still going. And JJ, this is the one that the complexion of both these series have changed. We had the Indians finally lose a game in the postseason. Their six-game winning streak is over. And we had the Cubs' invincibility cloak definitely lost as they're down in their series against the Dodgers, down 2-1, and back-to-back shutouts, which does not happen very often in the postseason. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, I would imagine Game 5 is pretty important for both teams. But for Cleveland, you can't let them feel like they're back in this series, can you?
Well, we had this discussion yesterday, and Terry Francona is much smarter at this than I am, but this was my reasoning for why I was a little worried about sending Kluber out there in Game 4, Ryan Merritt Game 5, is that if you sent Merritt out there Game 4 and rested Kluber Game 5, well then, if you lose Game 4, it's like, okay, no big deal. We rested our bullpen. I mean, you're essentially, you're not forfeiting that game in any way.
Right.
But you know Aaron Sanchez versus Ryan Merritt, you're probably going to lose that one.
You're at a disadvantage.
And then you say, you know what, but we got rested Kluber. And again, if we had fallen that way, rested Kluber, rested Miller, rested Cody Allen. Right. Here we go. And instead, you do have a rested Miller and Allen, but you now have Ryan Merritt going Game 5. If I'm the Blue Jays, for a team that's down 3-1, you feel pretty good about at least today. You feel like we should win this game today. We're facing a guy who...
The main thing is you have today. Today exists.
But you not only have today, you are facing what has to shape up as one of the least, not just experienced, but one of the least likely starting pitchers in a postseason game we have ever seen. Ryan Merritt has made one other big league start.
Yeah, I think back to, what's Reyes' for? Anthony Reyes, the former USC mm-hmm. right-hander, who inexplicably became a postseason ace, basically, for the Cardinals in 2006. There was a lot of inexplicable things about that Cardinals team, but Anthony Reyes was a decent prospect. He was a college ace. He was Mark Pryor's running wingman his last year at USC. And it had some major league time, a little bit more than Ryan Merritt.
The only other pitcher to do this on one start is a little different. That was Matt Moore.
Yes, a little different.
That was a little different. Matt Moore was the best pitching prospect in the game at the time. He had coming off of a season where he had dominated
right.
in the minors. Nothing against Ryan Merritt, but Ryan Merritt is, this is essentially, and you understand why the Indians are doing this, but this is them throwing their number 7 starter, number 7, number 8 starter from their depth chart for the
basically.
Season out there in a game. So if you're the Blue Jays, you go, okay, look, if we can win this one, then it's 3-2. All we got to do is win two games.
Well, they got to win one first, mm-hmm. But this is one where with Marco Estrada versus Ryan Merritt, you like your chances. And Estrada, you know, this is one of the reasons I thought Toronto was going to win this series. I like their starting pitching and the shape it was in better than Cleveland. JJ, what's the over-under on what inning we see Andrew Miller?
Oh, I see. The thing to me is it? I think there's about a 35% shot that if he gets in, it's just like literally a batter or two just to keep him fresh, or not. You just say he's going to have 3 full days off.
If Toronto just jumps Ryan Merritt,
I do not think. I mean, you do have a day off tomorrow, so you know if the
right.
game's in any way close.
Right. If the game's in any way close, he's coming in. That's what I'm saying. If the game is tied in the fourth inning, you're going to see Andrew Miller
right. oh, yeah.
for a time or two through the lineup.
And I agree on that. I just don't know if they can get... Again, maybe there is the advantage. Nowadays, how it is, it's not like Ryan Merritt's going to go out there and this is going to be who's Ryan Merritt. Which really, if you rewound the clock just 10 years ago, there would be a certain amount of, uh-oh, our advanced stuff, we don't really have much on Ryan Merritt. We weren't prepping for Ryan Merritt. But nowadays, it's like, okay, here's everything from his start at the big league level and what he's done in the big leagues. And then here's video of every start he made in AAA this year.
Right.
And we've had time to build. There are guys, you know, who can put this all together and, like, here you go. So it's not like Ryan Merritt's going to go out there and it's going to be like, wait, what does he throw or anything like that. But there is sometimes your hope if you're an Indians fan is there's something to be said sometimes for unfamiliarity with a pitcher. And if you're the Blue Jays, you know, there aren't a whole lot of guys in these lineups who are going to be very familiar with Ryan Merritt.
Oddly enough, Ryan Merritt did not pitch against Buffalo this year, the Blue Jays AAA affiliate.
They were thinking ahead.
Maybe they have a little less information on Ryan Merritt than we thought. He had no starts against Buffalo this year. I'd have to look up his 2015 game-by-game to see if he faced New Hampshire.
It sounds funny, but the thing that is now a difference maker on that compared to a couple of years ago is
MILB TV.
MILB TV.
And you can, there's scouting you can do off that, but you clearly would feel much more confident in your information.
Absolutely.
If you had scouts who saw him and your own managers and coaches in the AAA had also seen him.
Right. It also doesn't hurt, though, that you also have TrackMan at those levels, too.
There's a lot of data. There's no doubt there's going
to
be a lot of data.
But you would love to have... Hey, you know, here's what I noticed. Here's what I saw. And you know what though? I will say, the crazy thing about it is they probably did have someone who saw him, you know, at some point during the year. And it's like that pro scout was just doing his coverage. That report just became a lot more important.
You sure hope so, because he saw New Hampshire once in 2015. So they don't, you know, for being in the same league the last 2 years, they actually don't have a ton of. Here's what we thought about Ryan Merritt when you saw him. So that is a fascinating matchup, JJ. And we did see, we thought that would be Mike Clevinger who would be that next man up. We saw him yesterday in relief. He wasn't great. You could kind of see why the Indians went Merritt. Because to me, the real surprising thing is they went the left-hander over the right-hander because mm-hmm. it's a pretty right-handed hitting power lineup that Toronto has. You would think Clevinger would have been the better matchup.
Yeah, they've been pretty clear about this, that they think
right.
of it as, I mean, this was like when we, you know, rewind a round ago.
Yeah.
When it was, well, are we going to bring Kluber back or not? The guy was, it was not, or Clevinger, it was Ryan Merritt.
Right, exactly. So I'm a little bit surprised. So there's one young left-hander starting in the under card. We have another young left-hander, a much younger left-hander starting in the main event tonight. And I'm not talking about the presidential debate in Las Vegas tonight. I'm talking about L.A., Julio Urias, J.J., going up against the Cubs. And we've seen left-handers, I mean, that movie was trash, but we've seen trouble with the curve for the Cubs the last two games. And one of them was Clayton Kershaw, but one of them was Rich Hill. I didn't even think he was great, Rich Hill. Rich Hill looked hittable yesterday, and the Cubs didn't sniff him, and they have six hits the last two games, seven hits, whatever it is. This is suddenly a Cubs lineup that misses Kyle Schwarber's pure field of hit.
Yeah, no, it does, and it's funny you were talking about it yesterday. They did move Addison Russell down in the lineup, and so what happened early in the game, with the game really before,
right?
You know, something that could have really, it's one at bat, but it could have changed the game. But with two runners on, if I remember correctly, and I think it was the first inning, Russell's up there and, or the second inning maybe, but Russell's up there and strikes out on a curveball. And that, you know, again,
he did not want to be up there either.
Right now, it is a truly a struggle for him. But that leads me to, I do want to talk about, one of the things I was excited to talk about today is Rich Hill.
Yeah.
Because
this is another, we talk about Ryan Merritt's unlikely for his lack of resume for this start. Rich Hill's resume is extremely rare and maybe unprecedented to find
a
significant
playoff
starter.
You know how they say when you apply for the job, really try to keep your resume on one page?
You can't
do that if you're Rich Hill. If
this
Rich
is
Hill
correct.
Was sending his to the Atlantic League last year looking for a job, you know, it's like in the league, because he did not have a job in affiliated ball.
We may have just dated ourselves, though, a little bit, because
resumes,
I think.
Page? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but hey, I haven't had to apply for a job in 15 years, thankfully.
How many screens is your LinkedIn page?
Yeah.
You know?
But his career, I mean, Rich Hill was a dude. This was a guy who always was thought to be,
Always a dude.
A significant prospect. I think he peaked out at number 5 on the Cubs list in after the 2005 season going into 06.
Right.
And then not long after that, like it's hard to remember, but had a year where he basically was a regular part of the Cubs rotation for the entire season, basically, and was pretty good.
Yeah, he made 32 starts, you said?
And then right after that, the control troubles that have really always been the Rich Hill problem.
Right.
He's always had, not always, I shouldn't say.
It hasn't been a bug. It's been a feature of Rich Hill's career.
If you go back, actually, and look where our draft report of him when he was sophomore eligible, he didn't have the curveball yet. But by his junior year at Michigan, he kind of had the curveball. And ever since then, he's always had this curveball. He's always had enough fastball.
You mean after he tried to transfer out of Michigan and help get Jeff Zahn fired? That's one of the first mentions we have of Rich Hill.
That's when we're digging deep in
the
archive.
That's a deep cut.
But he always, it never, throughout his career, it was something where when his control went poorly, it really went poorly.
Right.
He had stretches where he was walking 7, 8, 9 per nine. And amazingly, you don't have a whole lot of success when you're doing that.
how you figure?
You
usually don't have playoff starters who play with, how many teams did you count they played for? 23?
23 different professional teams.
And one of them was the Long Island Ducks. So.
Now, I was going to say, did you look this up? Because if you haven't looked it up, I was going to, he has played for 8.
I haven't looked it up.
8 major league organizations. And as you start to go through those, I'm going to grab my cheat sheet because I wrote this down.
Well, I know we obviously have Dodgers. I can start with Dodgers, and I can go Red Sox and Athletics and Nationals. But I do think Cardinals because I'm pretty sure I saw Derek Gould tweeting about him. So Cardinals, Athletics, Dodgers, Red Sox, and Nationals for sure. We mentioned Cubs. So that's 6 that I'm very confident in. The other 2 I'm not going to be confident in. Those would just be shots in the dark. So I know you're looking for your cheat sheet.
I can't find my cheat sheet, but I do remember. So
Baltimore and Cleveland are the other 2.
Orioles is the one.
Oh, and he's also, is
he
this
was a Yankee.
Angel?
He was an Angel. He was a Yankee.
But in the major leagues, they're different. So I think it's more than 8 organizations because there's Baltimore and there's the Angels. And I'm pretty sure that Cardinals and Nationals have been.
I do not know. I know. That's
minor
the thing.
League
he
ones. Not in the major leagues.
Yeah, I was talking about 8. Sorry. I was saying 8.
Major league organizations?
If I remember correctly.
Because Syracuse in 2015, that's clearly the Nationals. And the Yankees, oh, that wasn't the major leagues.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I didn't know. I missed that one over here. It's a lengthy.
He's been released multiple times. He reached major league free agency this offseason, but he's gone through minor league free agency so many times that he knows better than the agents do the rules of minor league free agency at this point. He's had his contract sold twice. He's been released. And then all of a sudden, here you are. And
It's Dodgers, Oakland, Cubs, Baltimore, Boston, Cleveland, Angels, and Yankees.
And at this point, I do feel like
he has 38 career wins in that span. That's not a lot.
No.
And that's after winning 17 games his first 2 seasons. So he was on his way to being a perfectly good starter in his first, 42 outings with the Cubs and just fell apart.
And here's the crazy question is that now, and you are talking about the guy who may be the best free agent starting pitcher on the market this offseason.
There's a lot of weird going on here. Now, weird would have been the Cubs just beating him, the Cubs steamrolling the Dodgers, the Cubs were the best team in the regular season. Now, JJ, I imagine that there's some comfort in the fact that John Lackey is a very experienced playoff starter.
Right, but he's,
I guess he's 3rd right now in active pitchers and wins in the postseason.
He's pitched on, it does help.
Bumgarner, CeCe Sabathia, and then Lackey are the 3 active leaders in wins, so John Lackey knows how to go 5 innings and leave with a lead, for what that's worth.
But he is facing a pitcher tonight who, the thing I do not worry about, I'm not saying that the Cubs may get to Julio Urias tonight. They're not going to get to him because he's the youngest pitcher to ever start a postseason game, and it's going to be too big for him. That does not concern me.
I'm not worried about that either. He was good against the Nats the other day, and there was a lot on the line.
He is the guy, he is every bit, if Lackey is, hey, I'm going to give you 5 good ones and get out, We know Urias is not going to give you a complete game tonight or anything like that.
Yeah.
But
they're looking for maybe two times through the order, and then let's see what happens.
Right.
You know?
But it would not surprise me at all if you said at the end of four, at the end of five today, he has not given up any runs. It would not surprise me at all if he got through five having given up no runs and then got pulled before the sixth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. JJ, do you see anything when you watch the Cubs hitters? Because that was actually one of the things I was trying to bear down on yesterday when I watched. Is there anything that you see from Anthony Rizzo or Addison Russell that explains these valleys they're going through right now? And do you think the Cubs have any other, does Joe Maddon have any other rabbits to pull out of his hat in terms of the lineup that you would expect him to change or that you could see him changing as the series goes along to try to coax a little bit more offense out of his lineup?
I'm really boring for these kind of things because if what I do think happens is it's a much bigger spotlight. But
definitely
these troughs and peaks and valleys and all happen all through the season. And when they happen during the season, you have time that you just get out of them. You know, you will have stretches during the season when Addison Russell looks as lost as he looks right now.
Right.
And then you have a day where you go 2 for 2, 2 for 4, or you go 3 for 4, and all of a sudden that's behind you. Because there is a part of hitting that is when you feel confident at the plate,
right,
good things happen.
Definitely.
When you're scuffling, bad things happen. Because
and they get magnified this time of year for sure.
And they get magnified. It may be that those two basically go through, could be a bad next couple of games, all of a sudden they're eliminated, and you go, wow, they just really choked for the playoffs.
Right.
But at the same time, I do think that that would be more that they ran out of games than it is that, I don't think that,
that's right.
I don't think it's the spotlight, I don't think it's anything other than, as a hitter, hitters are, their streaks, their good streaks, their bad streaks, and it is very unfortunate for the Cubs, because this is a lineup that, there's nothing about this where you say this lineup is flawed and here's where their flaws are being exposed.
Right, and you know, and on the season, they were better against left-handed pitchers than they were against right-handed pitchers. They were 267, 357, 449 slash line against lefties, 252, 338, 421 against righties. So I mean, it wasn't just Bryant. I mean, like Rizzo held his own against left-handed pitching. And Addison Russell was second on their team with 9 home runs against left-handed pitching. That just aren't getting it done. I don't think it's anything that's structural. Like
but
you're
the
saying.
Thing about it is the last 2 days, okay, one of those was against Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw can do a very good job of making you look really cold.
And this is true.
And Rich Hill. And I agree with you, it wasn't like Rich Hill at his absolute best, but it was effectively like it was. Rich Hill, when he's been healthy this year, has been one of the better pitchers in baseball. Now, he wasn't healthy for a good bit of the year.
Right.
But so they have gotten shut down the last 2 days. This is not the, hey, you faced Josh Tomlin and, you know, why did the Blue Jays not score? This is facing two really good pitchers. Rich Hill, there's a reason that the Dodgers gave up an awful lot of pitching talent for Rich Hill. When Rich Hill was on the DL, yeah, and you didn't know even exactly when you would have him coming back.
I mean, like, and like you said, pending free agent, and they still gave up Jarrell Cotton. I really like Jarrell Cotton.
Jarrell Cotton, Grant Holmes,
and their Frankie Montas 2 years ago. I'm not on Frankie Montas. I mean, he has value. He's the third of those three guys,
right,
for
easily. But Frankie,
he throws 100.
If you told me that Frankie Montas, though, ends up going into a pen and has 3 or 4 years of very effective work, like
I would be stunned.
See, I'm not.
I would be stunned. His fastball doesn't play like an 8 fastball.
No, but
it
plays
80 velocity.
But it plays like a 6 or 7, which if you put that in the pen, that still is. We've seen.
It's a 7th inning guy, sixth inning guy. He's Brian Shaw-ish. That's just not. I mean, he throws harder, but I'm not convinced. To me, Frankie Montas is
4 years
exist.
Of Brian, but
Jarrell Cotton,
right,
put him in the bullpen.
Oh.
He's a closer.
Right.
Makeup. Premium secondary pitch, and I think he's a starter.
The funny thing is we're not, we both agree on this. I just think, like, the 4 years of Brian Shaw, if you give me 4 years of Brian Shaw, they're actually at $550,000 per year.
Right.
There's value to that.
There is value to that, but I mean, I just don't think of him as any. He's overblown as a prospect in prospect circles, in my humble opinion. But Rich Hill was not overblown by the Dodgers. He did what that even if it's just that start. If they lose the rest of the series without him pitching, him giving them the lead in the series, that's what they were looking for when they went out and traded for Rich Hill. Still, the other surprising part for me is the Cubs weren't able to get to the Dodger bullpen. Basically, the Dodger bullpen is, I'm going to stitch this together pitcher by pitcher. Oh. Joe Blanton and Grant Dayton are getting important outs for this team.
Retired dude and dude who was available in last year's Rule 5 draft.
And then, but it's all getting to Kenley Jansen. And Kenley Jansen's the other guy in this postseason who's kind of building a little legend for himself, JJ. He's got this great backstory. Yet another Curacao guy who's making an impact in the major leagues. And, I mean, like, it seems like
the Dutch national team is really bummed by this because the innings he's throwing here is going to make it harder for them to get him for the WBC.
Yeah, the Puerto Rico is to the 2017 WBC as the Netherlands was the 2013. So we'll get that out of the way early. We'll have to have a WBC podcast soon, but Kyle will be angry if we have that without him. But for me, like, Jansen's the guy who's like the star, and where you know the cutter's coming. And if it's two strikes, everybody, you don't even have to look back and sneak a peek to see if Grandal's standing up. You know he's doing it. You know you're getting a high cutter. That's why last weekend of the season, when David Dahl got on top of one of those and hit a home run for the Rockies, I was like, holy crap, David Dahl, how did you do that? Because none of the Cubs have been able to do it, and none of the Nationals were able to do it either. It's not an unhittable pitch because I saw David Dahl do it. But it is. You can't get behind that guy. Two strikes, he finishes everyone off. That's not easy this
time
of year.
That's not easy when you literally...
And he's doing it every time. It's really impressive.
If you want to talk about a dominant pitch to me is the one, which is what Mario Rivera did for 15 years.
I'm throwing you a cutter.
Right, where the catcher literally is like, you know, we're not doing signs. Cutter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What's coming next? Cutter. I mean, which is Grandal's answer. I loved that interview, you know, after the game. Right. It was like pretty much, what did he know? A 97-mile-an-hour cutter. 97-mile-an-hour cutter. 97. I mean, because it is. It is. That is. The funny thing about it is the cutter is, if you said what is, at its best, the most dominant pitch in baseball.
The best cutters are.
The best cutter are the most dominant pitch. Because
it's also the pitch that changes pitchers from like a non-guy to a guy more than anything else
because,
in baseball today.
Because the cutter, if you think about every other great pitch you're talking about, if you talk about Andrew Miller's slider, Andrew Miller's slider is something where there is something in the back of your head. The effectiveness of that slider stems in, at least in part, from the fact that you're looking at it and going, is this fastball or slider?
Right, right.
The cutter, and again, I understand that fastball and cutter, you can play off each other. Kelly Jansen's not playing his cutter off of his fastball. He's just throwing the cutter. And it doesn't matter because when it has that kind of that movement, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the thing that...
Again, that's what Rivera did for 15, 20 years.
The amazing thing to me about Jansen, too, is that, you know, they keep showing the video of him as a catcher. He doesn't throw like a catcher. I remember when he got converted, Logan White telling me, like, hey, when you see him... Remember that this guy was a catcher because his arm action doesn't look like a catcher.
And it's funny, we've seen
Troy Percival was a converted catcher.
Jason Mott.
Those are the two converted catchers that stick out in my head of short arm action catcher to pitcher conversion. Henry Owens was a guy, the right-handed Henry Owens did it for the Mets and the Pirates.
It's funny. Then I'm thinking of them like guys like who was the Cardinals conversion guy who didn't make it out of. He had a great
Rowan
year
Wick.
In the FSL. No, Rowan Wick is now the guy trying it now.
He's an outfielder.
He was an outfielder. I mean, the Cardinals have done this 1,000 times.
Robert Stock.
I'm not even thinking about Robert Stock, who is the better version of
okay.
that, who was, but I will name, it's, but he blew his arm out when he got to Double-A. But it was the worst form
arm
of
action.
Catcher
oh,
arm
okay.
action that you would see on the mound.
It's like a bow and arrow delivery that you see. And Kenley Jansen has always, I guess, from day one, looked like a pitcher. And he looked like a pitcher when he first converted. He's looked like a pitcher ever since he became the Dodgers closer, and what a weapon he's become. And you know, Dodgers obviously are relying very heavily on him. And yesterday their offense was pretty impressive, JJ. And considering the last time that Jake Arrieta pitched there, he left the game in his full body pajamas after his no-hitter. a little bit different outcome, a little bit different Jake Arrieta. He's definitely invincible. He's not invincible in any way, shape,
no,
or form this year. Human.
And that is when you say how much has he gone from having that magic year, which really for him it does feel like in some ways it was a magic year in some ways, is that this was Rich Hill versus Jake Arrieta, and the outcome happens like it did, and you don't come out of it saying, wow, the Dodgers really stole one there.
Right. No, you don't.
Which,
so,
if that happened the night before, then you would have said, you know, if you beat if the Cubs and you beat Kershaw, you feel like you did steal one.
So a different dynamic after yesterday's games. Today's games are going to be pretty, I think they'll be fascinating. That pitching matchup, the Estrada-Merritt pitching matchup, is fascinating. And I wouldn't want to go back to Cleveland if I were the Indians. I would not want Toronto to get on that plane. That would be the happy flight to end all happy flights in some ways.
You made the approach. I understand it. And it does mean that it keeps Kluber available as an option in some way for Game 7. But the downside of it is that it does now, it's a rockier path, because what you're talking about is Merritt, Tomlin, and probably Kluber.
Yeah, Corey Kluber, we just had the article that Jason Stark wrote that's in the next edition of the magazine talking about, you know, there's no more aces anymore and how rare it is to get what Bumgarner's done. Corey Kluber going to try to do it. I mean, like in the old days, you set up your ace to go 1-4-7. Doesn't happen very often anymore, but Corey Kluber is set up to do that. Toronto would love to have him do that. They would love to get to Game 7. Right now, they're just trying to get to Game 6. So we'll talk about it tomorrow morning earlier in the next Baseball America Playoff Podcast. But for JJ, I'm John. Enjoy the games this afternoon and this evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.